This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Bugs, as their name implies, are pests to most of us. They're an annoyance, something to rid our homes of, something to exterminate. But to some scientists at NC State, bugs might be the first responders of the future. Those scientists are looking at ways to rig insects with sensing devices and guide them by remote control into places where humans can't or shouldn't go, like disaster zones. And just how will they make these biobots? That's what Alper Bozkurt is going to tell us right now. He's an assistant professor in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department at North Carolina State University. Alper, welcome to the program. It's good
Thank
to have you
very much. Thanks for your invitation, Frank.
We're going to get to how you make a biobot, but I have to ask you first, were you interested in bugs as a child?
Oh, yeah. I mean, bugs are has been very amazing creatures for me around, and I started to develop a better interest when I was working as an engineer, because we definitely are fascinated by the complexity and operational efficiency of these tiny little guys. As engineers, electrical engineers, we try to build tiny robots in that scale. It's almost impossible. So when you see that it's happening in the real life, you are amazed with that.
All right, so that's it. So as an engineer, amazed at how much can be done with so little stuff,
right? Exactly.
And,
yeah,
and all very efficient. Why can't we build anything that small that works that well?
There are different problems or challenges in that scale. When we talk about terrestrial bugs like cockroaches, the building mechanical parts that scale is sort of challenging. And another problem has been powering those systems. In the future, in near future, we may have some terrestrial insects, but aerial ones, flying ones, is real challenge, because in that scale, aerodynamics doesn't work as we envision in the larger scale. For example, if you take an airplane like a Boeing or Airbus, if you bring it down to the scale of an inch, it's not going to fly with its fixed wings. You need to have flapping wing design.
Hmm. And yet, you'll still have as much leg room.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so that's it. Some things don't even scale down, even if you had the stuff to make them, right? So then you get the idea that we can just remotely control the bugs that already are here,
exactly.
Right?
The concept of bioelectricity has been there for hundreds of years. Galvani performed his early experiments with frog legs, where he didn't have any electrical tools. He collected electricity from lightnings and thunderstorms, and he was able to twitch the frog legs. And right now, we have all these pacemakers, all these deep brain stimulators for Parkinson's patients. We have artificial ears and et cetera. So we use the concept of bioelectricity in the practical medical world. So we came up with the idea of using this to control the locomotion of or the movement of the insect. Actually, there has been some other efforts, but we tried to make this very practical by inventing a new surgical procedure, which actually enables us to perform batch insertions on those insects to have an automated mass production line.
So batch insertions?
Yeah.
You do several insertions at the same time.
So the idea we came up is actually we started this with my doctorate advisor at Cornell University, Amit Lal, and I moved to NC State just a year ago. So the idea is using the metamorphic development of insects. Just for our listeners, most insects go through metamorphic development. They start their lifetime as an egg, then they become a caterpillar, and then they build a hard cuticle or hard shell around their body. They become a pupa, and finally they emerge as an adult. During this pupal stage, 90% of the body is degenerated and formed de novo. It's redesigned almost, because caterpillars are good for living on the leaves, eating leaves. They live during the daytime. When you look at the moths, for example, they are nighttime flyers. They have wings. They have flight muscles. They can perform very acrobatic maneuvers on the air. So there is this transformation. You know, we are amazed with this Transformers movie, but this is happening in daily life, in the nature, in a daily basis. So we came up with the idea of performing our surgeries during the pupal stages, such that when there is this change is going on in the body, the implanted structures are accepted by the body. So the wound caused by the surgery is auto-repaired very rapidly because body is changing, and the inserted structures are adopted by the body when they come out of their tiny cuticles or tiny shells. So when they emerge with artificial structures on their bodies. So, and when we also try to build or try to come up with surgical strategies to have the surgeries very simple. We are electrical engineers. We are not biologists. We don't want to get into the lab and spend hours to do surgery on the insect. So our surgeries takes only a couple of seconds
for us. So you can get all of these things into a caterpillar. Caterpillar forms a cocoon, and all of a sudden it comes out with all the little electrodes or
Yeah, we actually try to do with the caterpillar. Caterpillar is challenging to work on because it's very fragile, it's very delicate. So we try to do it on the cocoon stage or on
the
pupil stage.
And in there. And then in transforming itself, it just integrates those circuits or those little chips. And are they chips? What is it?
So we try to have electrical conducting lines getting into the muscles and neurons of the insect, and we keep the electronics outside for research purposes. And the insects that we are using are not very big, so you cannot hide all those electronic inside with the current technologies. But in the future, it can be embedded inside, probably, or it can be implanted inside.
How particular does it have to be? How precise does the placement have to be? It seems like you're really counting on nature to put it in the
right
place.
Yeah, it depends on. So when you look at the locomotory physiology of insect, it's very detailed. So we try to get into the larger parts. So we try to implant our electrodes to the muscle groups of insects. So they are relatively larger. When you think about the thorax of the insect or chest of the insect, almost 80 to 90% of is the flight muscles. And there are two groups of flight muscles for flapping the wing up and down. So we try to get onto those muscle groups, and we try to induce up and down stroke of flapping. Actually, we have a YouTube video for our listeners. If they go to YouTube and if they search for cyborg insects, we have more than 1.5 million hits, so it's an internet sensation. I don't advise them to read the comments because people don't know about the details, so they have some nasty comments saying that we may be torturing insects, but we actually respect insects and we try to be very careful when we are performing our
surgery.
What
are we going to do with these insects now? Once you've got the electrodes implanted, you can control them remotely, I suppose, like any other remote-controlled vehicle or anything we've ever used.
Yeah. So as you said at the beginning, there are certain problems as humans we are having difficulties or challenges to sense. For example, when there is, think about this leakage that happened in Japan with the nuclear plant. So it was difficult for humans to get in there. Or environmental sensing for a sustainable environment has been a problem that engineers working on. And we try to build environmental sensing technologies using these insects. We will put them in the nature. They will live for 3 to 4 weeks. And some of these insects lives for years. For example, hissing cockroaches we start to work on recently lives for around 7 years. So
But that, let me stop you there, because you've got the electrodes, the remote control apparatus embedded. It's integrated. And then you've got things that you put on them, sensory devices, either microphones or detection devices to detect maybe radiation or something like that, that gets placed on them. And then you sort of direct them by remote control to the place you want
them. Another thing that we are working on is using their natural sensors for biological sensing, so they can sense different things. For example, the moths that we are working on is tobacco hawk moth, Manduca zexta, which is very common in North Carolina. They can sense, they use the tobacco leaves as host plants, and they can sense the smell of tobacco. So you can use this technology to find out if your kids are smoking or not. Just kidding.
Put a few cockroaches in the kids' room and find out if they've been smoking. So the good news is earthquakes too. We have detection devices. They can find little crevices.
Yeah, this was another application area that we are interested in. So there has been a lot of earthquakes around the world, and you know, when earthquake hits, every second is very important to rescue people in the under the rubble, and it's difficult to get in those locations because basically it's there are not very, you know, too much space to get in there. So we are planning to use these insects to get into those locations and having a tiny microphones, trying to sense if somebody is asking for help or
that's,
not.
That's all good, but I can smell the military applications now, and I don't care whose military develops it. These little bugs are going to come back and bite us where we don't want to scratch.
Yeah.
I mean, are there thoughts about military applications?
There should be. You know, whenever you develop a technology, it can be used for anything. For example, the simplest example is flame. So you can, our ancestor invented the flame, somebody used it for cooking and others used it to develop weapons. So there has been some interest by the military, of course, and I don't know the exact applications where they can be used.
Alper, fascinating stuff. Thanks so much for joining us.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your invitation.
Alper Bozkurt is an assistant professor in the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department at North Carolina State. For more information on remote-controlled bugs, you can go to insectcyborgs.com. Just ahead, North Carolina writer Charles Chestnut, a man ahead of his time. It's another installment of our Literary Light series, and you will hear it on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.